This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manakwisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 52 of the AdNonTech Podcast. Joining me here and now, Mr. Doctor. I called you a mister, but you're clearly a doctor. Doug Reed, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
It's Saturday, you know. It's 10 whatever in the morning it is. I got nothing to complain about. And if I did have things to complain about, nobody would care. And that's legit. So, you know, that's a piece of wisdom that was passed down. I don't know if that was my mom I can attribute that to back in the day or what. But I don't know. I mean, we had a shit ton of weather for a couple of days straight around these parts. I don't know if you knew. I don't know if you experienced some of that yourself. We got to get the maritime thing kind of done and dusted.
Out of the way, yeah.
Is the weather okay, Doug? Is I guess what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah. It was bizarre yesterday because I had meetings canceled because the weather was going to be bad and it was rainy and there was a little bit of wind, but it wasn't even like super high winds. But everything got rescheduled.
We had a blizzard 2 days ago. Like we had like more snow on Thursday than actually I've seen during the winter part of the year here. So that was interesting. Walking to and from work, it was like snow whiteout conditions on the way, and then like rain and stuff on the way back. And I was just like, well, I'm gonna walk. I always walk, so I'm gonna walk. Anyway, dude, I'm turning into a crotchety old man. That's what that was right there. In case it wasn't clear.
Welcome to the club.
Wouldn't want it any other way. It beats the alternative, actually, you know, as far as it goes. Just my opinion. So now that we've got our sort of maritimisms, preambulations out of the way, why don't you tell us what we're talking about here today, Doug?
We are talking about EdTech project design and implementations. That's where I wanted to go. I started these notes ages ago because I found one awesome article. And then this week I realized like this was a gap. You know those blind spots that I know I have blind spots in my vision. Right, where we take a look at a certain thing and I just don't see the trees for the forest. And we talk a lot about projects and stuff we've implemented and stuff we've tried, but we've never dug into the actual let's do a project. So I thought today'd be a cool day for that.
Cool, man. Well, again, I certainly appreciate the notion of going back to things that were spoken of before or trying to address gaps in practice or in theory for that matter. So this is a good one, I think. My first quizzical kind of wondering thingy about it would be, are you sort of looking more within the realm of project management? Because that's like literally its own body of knowledge, you know, like Project Management Institute courses and things like that? Like, is that sort of the tack you would be taking with this? Or are you looking at this more from a perspective of like learning design and or instructional design? Because I can differentiate between those and speak to those. But when I hear like projects, I sort of think, project management as in a sort of business process of sorts. You know what I mean, pal?
I do. Okay. And I don't think I meant either, because in my head, as I wrote my notes up, I thought about us. I thought yep. about this podcast, and I thought about the stuff we'd learned and what we came in with and what we've got now and how it some things have morphed and changed and some have been very true and we've stayed on course. And I remember when I started my master's at the University of Calgary, a really good friend of mine one day was working on something and he seemed annoyed. And I'm like, what's wrong, man? You're happy. You're a happy guy. You're always happy. What is going on? And he looked at me and he said, never get involved with anything with the word project in the title. He goes, it never ends. He said, I thought that this was done 3 years ago. And I just got an email that this other thing has to happen. It's like, I haven't been in that job role for 2 years, but I'm still stuck doing this.
Out of like a moral obligation to former colleagues and former work, I suppose. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of an extreme example, 3 years removed. But I guess I would just say your colleague is one heck of a good sport, because I would have certainly, I mean, unless it was something that was like vitally important to me as a person, I would just be like cutting ties, like no matter who they were, I'd just be like, sorry, dudes, I'm out. Like, when I left TRU, I actually left some legit stuff just kind of hanging because, like, I don't know. I was – the circumstances of the thing kind of left me kind of feeling like I don't really want to take any of this with me. So – and yet, Doug, as you're well aware – we're now in this podcast endeavor, actually providing educational services of sorts to certain students, which is awesome. So that's an interesting thing. I just keep coming back to that, as in like, the circumstances which caused this podcast to come into being are now bringing this show effectively onto the curriculum of some students at the school in question. So you never know what you're in for, pals. So projects. I never thought of this podcast as being like a project, if I'm being honest. Really? I don't know, man. I'm just kind of thinking aloud now at this point, because there's a lot of places you could go with this topic, obviously.
And that's where I assume we're going to go. To someplace we didn't predict.
Yeah, well, sure. So I'm pretty compelled here. I do have the notes and the Romanzowski article here from 2004 with the four categories of e-learning. I haven't seen this particular acronym before, and I do pride myself on being somewhat of an acronym collector.
And what I love is this author's title. How's the e-learning, baby? Factors leading to success and failure of EdTech innovation. But it was like, how's the e-learning? If you've ever get a chance to watch the Australian movie called The Castle.
Okay.
It's if you're Australian, it is one of the funniest movies ever made. And if you're not Australian, I'd sit and explain some of the bits to you and explain why they're funny. So that makes it less funny. But they had a line in it like, how is the serenity? How is the serenity? And this is like, how is the e-learning, baby?
Right. Fair enough. Well, always a legit question. Certainly somewhat the basis for this show. How's the e-learning, baby? Indeed. Yeah. Indubitably. So the title grabbed you. What else grabbed you about this one, bud?
For me, it's the categories. I love categories. Okay. I have a full. I have folders all over my file system with MISC. Right, it's like comics organized into whatever MISC, images organized into whatever MISC, literature organized by the various topics, and then MISC. And so the miscellaneous is where I just dump stuff. And so to have like electronic or learning or management or needs,
yep,
this is awesome for starting a project.
Okay.
This is, so it's, what are we doing and why?
You start out with your sort of wider parameters, and then this is sort of a scaling or sorting mechanism of sorts.
Yeah. And sometimes, like if I look at this podcast, right, is there a real problem need worth addressing? Yes. We came at it from different perspectives, I think, but we both saw a need and both said, this is going to be cool, or this is going to be a solution, or let's move in this direction to see if we can then produce something. And there's a person named Holly Ringland, and she has this fantastic quote. And what it is, this is what we have to offer. And that's the whole quote. It's like, what can we do? This is what we have to offer. So this is what we're doing.
Exactly. So that's a really good way of looking at it. You know, if we were if we were carpenters, but you kind of are a carpenter. So it's sort of.
I'm a woodworker that makes a lot of sawdust and makes a lot of stuff to burn.
So we use that word carpenter sparingly, and it's you don't feel it's applicable. Okay, well, so then.
No, I'm very respectful of the boundaries, because I think there are proper carpenters out there that have skills that are amazing.
Yep.
And I putter away at it, and I'll eventually get there, and my stuff ends up being okay. Right? People like it, and I've been complimented, but I'll never make an income off it, because it takes me forever. I'd be making about 10 cents an hour at the speed I go, but... So I'm just trying to be respectful for, I know what my skills are.
Right.
So,
and you know what they aren't.
I know what they aren't. That's part of the problem with having this terminal degree. Like, we both have the terminal degrees, and we both know what we don't know. And we go explore that.
They really do drill that into you in the programs. I mean, that's like, you're not even really an expert in this one little thing, but you know, everything outside this little area, that's just not even you. So, like, okay, good to know. If I ever want to sort of try and move into some of this other stuff, which is now the post-doctoral endeavor, I suppose, taking training, taking skills, taking experience, and through praxis, if you will, using that as a paradigm, if you will, for exploring other areas and further integrating it into practical, actionable knowledge.
Yeah.
Man, it's like we've been doing this stuff for a while or something, to just be able to throw down like that, pedagogy, speak, and whatnot. Dang.
And that perspective you just gave shows the difference in our doctoral programs, because you had classes. In Australia, I got in trouble for trying to take a class because my supervisor was like, stop screwing around, stop wasting time, get to work. And I'm like, no, the classes are important. He's like, no, your research is important. Stop wasting that 2 hours a week and get to work. So,
I guess it just sort of like different programs, different personnel, different values. Again, I would just can't speak highly enough of past supervisors and colleagues. Oh, yeah. University of Calgary, in my case, you know, for that stuff. So, so what else here? I mean, you like so the
what we've got
the
is
notion of categorizing.
I like the concept of address these four points. right? Is it going to be electronic? What does that look like? Or what do you think it might look like? Is this actually going to help students? If it's not going to help students, what are we doing? Right? And then the management is, how do we lay it out? Who's in charge of what? How are we situating it? Because it's way easier to design that early than to try to retrofit it 2.5 years later or 6 months later or whatever. And then, is this actually solving a need? And if the need is I need one more citation line in my CV, is that a real need? Or is that just, okay, I got to publish something, so what the heck, let's do
that. Well, I mean, I've been out of, like, academia or whatever for long enough now where I just, like, having spent going on a year here in the private sector, it's just, like, it's so much more transparent. Like, it's so much more just, like, okay, so here's, like, the work that you need to do. And when you complete this work that you need to do, just come and ask us and we'll give you some more work. And we'll decide if you're going to keep your job just based on how well you're doing this work. I'm like, okay, dudes. I mean, sounds a little too easy, but okay. Not that it's easy. Not that I'm sort of making light of anything. But I'm just like, but just like the whole, like, yeah, it's just speaking to your thing. Like, okay, I got to, like, add this and this so that it, like, looks good on my, you know, annual report. I'm going to do this, like, virtual conference or something that doesn't really have value, but it's, like, it's one more, you know, activity that can sort of fill out my expanding of influence, as it was, right? Yeah. And just all this stuff. Like, again, I don't know if it's just, like, that one particular setting. Maybe
it isn't.
Maybe I'll work at another university again. I will say, finally, just because apparently I'm a little, you know, about this topic, colleges don't have that to the same extent that universities do. And I don't even know, like, what it is. With you and me there, it was sort of like, it was a weird situation because, like, we were doctors, so-called, had doctor terminal degrees, like, in this area, but, like, almost nobody there in that unit did. Like, almost nobody in that unit had a terminal degree or, like, whatever. Speaking of cutting things off where they go, do go on, sir.
I wasn't trying to cut you off. I was
no, but that's effective use of the format, my dude.
So for the listener, what just happened is when we were not recording back months and months and months ago, we started to use the chat function in our software. And if people, we each have our verbal tics where I get in the loop and I keep saying the same thing over and over. So I just typed a little message to Matt in the middle of all that, just to let him know. I wasn't trying to distract you. I liked your point.
No, man. No, that's legit. I appreciate the use of the format, and I appreciate, like, now I don't necessarily have to mess it up with Camtasia for that. But if I do decide to, just based on the chat, I'm going to know based on the time of the chat relative to how long we can do in the recording. So that being said, folks, boundaries, process, it's all important. And it all factors largely into educational projects, I dare say. So, again, my whole, like, thing with the former employer right now is just like, well, I never expected to be invited back to do these kind of lectures that we're involved in through the show. I did not expect to be banned from their website for a couple months ago that I can't even, like, go to tru.ca and, like, actually see anything because they block my IP address. It's like existential I don't even know what. I'm sure the Germans have a word for it. They have a word for all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Their language is great for that.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's two states of one, and yet, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's got umulets in it, whatever it is. Anyway, dude, are we on to the next one here, pal? Or was there anything else you wanted to say about this?
One last thing about the Ramazowski 2004 article is they present let's think about it approach rather than, have you ever been in a meeting where random topic comes out of nowhere and suddenly there's a task force or there's a ad hoc committee and we're doing this thing and it's like, what? Like, can we put some thought into this first? Can we actually prepare before this goes into the meeting minutes that says this is happening?
A committee was struck. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good. There's a committee and I'm on it. Oh, good. I'm so glad I just attended this today. Yeah.
I had an associate dean at a previous institution. And what he would do is the ends of meetings would always wrap stuff up. Right? It's like, okay, so you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And we're going to. So he started leaving 8 to 10 minutes before the end of the meeting. And he would just leave. And everybody else is like, are we done? We haven't assigned the work. We haven't divvied up who's going to do what. And he'd just leave. And it's like, okay, I guess he's not doing anything.
We'll take his name off the list to be sure.
Yeah, but his name was on the agenda. He had attended for part of the meeting.
He got credit for being there, so he can put it in his annual report as having attended and or facilitated. Man, universities are funny. I just – the power, the flexing that goes on, it's just – it's I find it – some of the stereotypes can actually be true.
I think they're all true.
A lot of them.
I think they all are true.
Got an element of truthiness to them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, nobody – how often have you been on a project or on a team or a committee with zero understanding of who's supposed to do what? Who's taking the notes? Who's doing this as part of the assignment? Who's doing that part of the project? And there's no training. There's no training on how to do these things. So you get stuck in this project because somebody says, oh, yeah, you should go do that. And it's like, okay, what role am I filling now? Am I I hate this phrase, the devil's advocate, because that's just like, I'm basically the arsehole that just to shoot everything down. Right. I can shoot everything down. That is my superpower. Right?
It's one of them. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to control that sometimes, but where's the sit down for the orientation meeting to say, here's what the different roles are for this project and here's what we need you to do, or here's what I'm going to do, or here's what I think would be best for whatever. That doesn't happen in my experience, but we expect students to know how to do
it. It would be helpful in certain circumstances if everybody involved in the endeavor had kind of a common, I don't know what you call it, set of understandings, if you will. I know that's why Robert's Rules of Order have been implemented and promulgated as widely as they have in terms of running meetings. But, I mean, within my current thing, one of the self-directed pieces of professional development I did fairly early in my role, first 2 or 3 months kind of thing, was going into LinkedIn Learning, where they just have various videos. And if you go into like project management just as a thing, I mean, all kinds of stuff comes up and you can actually follow that into like, oh, this online LinkedIn course, technically, if I fulfill the conditions and download a certificate, actually counts towards like professional development units within the wider PMI framework or whatnot. But even just to forego that aspect of it and just get like, oh, okay, so here are the 5 functions or roles relative, like what you were just describing, you know, devil's advocate, scribe, critical, you know, questioner or whatever. And then how you can proceed and quantify what you're doing on the smaller tasks and how the smaller tasks are bundled into packages of larger tasks, essentially. So it's kind of, if everybody was just like, okay, we're going to watch these three LinkedIn videos, all of us, and this is the thing we're going to follow, or even just present a summary of the knowledge from those videos or whatnot. I'm not really trying to hype LinkedIn that much, but it's just there are resources out there on fundamental processes. And you're right. It just seems a lot of the time in post-secondary settings, such as I've experienced them, that, okay, we need this new thing for the internet site. Internet site, that's what I said. Let's all just throw in our efforts into this and like, oh man. And then months later, it's, and it's just really, it's not even like lack of will or interest. It's really, there's no acceptable, accepted process, no verifiable, this is how you know when you're done this part of it. This is how we're going to know when this larger thing is done once, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Again, just kind of rambling and rolling here, dude.
That leads us to the 2013 article that I found. Lafreniere, Hamill, and Searson. Barriers to Successful Implementation of Tech Integration in Education Settings.
Nice.
And one thing with ed tech projects is they change the status quo. They change what's been working. They change the regular practices. And that creates opportunities and it creates tension, which the opportunities are fantastic if you don't mind change. And the tensions arise, and the instant that happens in an education setting, then we have the posturing and we have the power structures that are in place. We have the people that are spending the money that expect or control the money that expect some sort of checklist of, yeah, we did this or did this or did this, and this is how we measured it. But all of those interpersonal aspects enter in, and it's crazy. You're like, how is that going to be managed? Is it a bottom up, top down? Is it, what about, how many projects have you heard of or have you been involved with where come September, because the academic year starts in September in most places,
yep,
where here's the new thing we're going to do at this institution. It's like, are we going to get any support or training on that? No, you figure it out. So they spent money on stuff, or they got schmoozed by some vendor. And then, yeah, go
schmoozed
figure it out.
Schmoozed by some vendor. Yeah, that's it's been known to happen, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I was at an institution where we became a Microsoft school rather than a Google school, right? Like that infrastructure changed in behind the scenes. And the next thing I knew, my private phone that nobody was paying for except me, I'm getting calls all hours of the day and night because they shared that information. And anytime somebody searched me on the database, my private phone number came up.
Oh, no. That sounds
and then
awful.
When I went and said, this is not cool, this needs to stop. Oh, well, we can't undo it because this is how the server works. And they told me a bunch of lies. And I said, you know I have a PhD in educational computing, right? So I know you're telling me something that's not true. Oh, well, no, you just don't understand. I said, and my brother's a software architect. And we've had these deep conversations. You are lying to me. This needs to stop. And I know you can do it.
It's like, the technician's default. We don't know how to do that. We don't do that. You can't do that. Just full stop.
And it's like, oh, well, no, it's not that simple. I said, it is. It is, and I know that it is. But it's one of those things. It's the people implementing a lot of this stuff, even in behind the scenes. They're not getting any training on it. They're going to YouTube to try to figure it out, or they're calling the vendor contact. And if the vendor contact doesn't call them back, they're muddling through. Some people are fantastic. Sometimes it works really well and it's super slick. But I think it should all be that way. Can you imagine if we did that with airplanes? Right? Kind of like what Boeing's doing now. Right? Oh, yeah. It might land okay. Right? That is not acceptable.
A better than 50% chance of landing safely. That's better. Better than 50. Go on.
Yeah. I would take a lot more trains and boats. It's like, oh, yeah, you got to roll the dice. If it's a six-sided die, you roll a 1 to 3, the plane didn't land okay. But 4, 5, 6, if you roll a 4, 5, 6, it lands okay. That would not be okay in that industry. And yet, in so many of these projects that I've seen, and part of that's because of the tensions that arise. It's, I know how to do this. Whatever that is, that I don't want to change my job, but my boss said we had to implement this new whatever this thing happens to be. So that tension is where the issue is, especially with the power structures, where everybody in the room knows that this person's a ding-dong who got their job because they go to golf with that other person and they went to this one's daughter's christening or whatever. So you can't say anything.
For instance,
this is a disaster.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no denying the effects of personal factors. I can say that I've had the benefit of being in situations where, because of individual personalities, that's been part of the motivating factor for being on it, because just like, oh, this is somebody I don't necessarily get to work with in my normal run of duties or whatnot. They seem creative. They seem cool. And sometimes that's all it takes. It's just, for me, it's just like, oh, you're an interesting person. I'm interested in having some conversations relative to trying to achieve something here. Again, a lot of the time, and much of the time, without a process as such, like, so I hear you, pal. So is there anything else about this Laferriere, Hamel, and Searson that you want to get into here, bud, before we move on to the next?
Have you ever worked in a place that created one of those super duper techie multimedia teaching classes or teaching labs?
I've heard tell. I've been employed at a place that did that. I didn't have really anything to do with it being done, but I'm aware of the concept. Yes, sir.
I worked at a place where they dumped $1 million into one classroom. And whoever the vendor was, I don't know if the vendor had naked pictures of somebody that spent the money, but I don't know what thought process went on. They took a room, they renovated it, and they spent $1 million on the technology, the implementations, the consultants, the all of that. And
consultant.
The instant they put educators in the room to teach students, they realized they hadn't talked to a single educator. So they spent $1 million, and this was a disaster of a room. People actively avoided using it because it was so bad. It was unbelievably bad. If you wanted to teach, you could only stand within like 30 centimeters of the podium on either side. So for the cameras to see you. But if you wanted them, if you wanted to be attached to the microphone, you had to go stand in the middle of the lecture hall. And you had to, like, get in between all the seats and stuff. So you had to, like, scurry along. You know, you go up one of those, like, lecture theaters where it's the stairs and all the little chairs have the little fold-out thing for notebooks and stuff. That's where the mic was. And nobody had put two and two together that those two things didn't connect. And it was crazy to me. And I look at architects. When I was at U of C, they were renovating the library in the education tower. And there was a guy on the architect side whose job it was to say, what do we do with the doorknobs? That was his job in the meeting. It's, are we replacing these doorknobs? So that's an added cost, and this is how many we need and all that. Or are we taking the doorknobs out of the old doors and replacing the doors and putting the old doorknobs back in? Like, there was that level of attention to detail, which I thought was brilliant. At the time, I was like, holy crap, this guy went to school for years to ask about doorknobs? But that wasn't what he was doing. This was his detailed job, and they had thought about it. And this is going to cost somebody something. So let's get that thought out there. Let's get it out right. And with ed tech, so many things we do are implementations that upset the status quo, right? And that tension is just an issue. So that's all I wanted to talk about.
That's major. That.
Yeah.
No, that's legit. That is highly interesting. And I think in the space that we occupy professionally, it definitely lands in as much as an investment is made, a financial investment in certain types of products and services relative to technology or support. And as you've demonstrated, I mean, that sounds like a ergonomic debacle of sorts in your scenario there. Any design process that ignores a holistic approach as its starting point is in for challenge, I think, is what we can draw from that. And that includes knowing your beginning, middle, and end points, so you have a frame of reference that actually helps. So, cool, man. So then
I'm going to jump back to that exact point you just made when we talk about the last reference. But okay. my third reference is Kohler and Jalov of a report on EduTech implementation at University of Colombo. And that was a 2020 article. And what they did is they had such a nice little table. And
Such a good table, though. That's awesome. Yeah.
And I'm a sucker for it because I like clarity. I like knowing exactly what it is. And they did something in this article that blew me away.
Okay.
They were honest. And this is a university in Sri Lanka, and they were honest. And it was so refreshing. Like, they had their current status, and then they had their needs. And some of this was crazy. It's like, yeah, we're using unlicensed copies of Microsoft Office and all these other programs. Yeah, we ripped them off. So, yeah, we might want to get on actually paying for this stuff.
Licensed software in today's day and age is not essential, but it's pretty significant to the educational enterprise.
Yeah. So there's money involved with that. And it was just so nice because the number of times it's like, oh, yeah, just download that or use the ripped version. Or I'm like, no, I'm not installing that on my work computer. And I'm definitely not installing whatever random stuff I'm downloading on my computer at home that I use sometimes. So it just made me feel so nice. And one of the other things when they were talking about status is internet access and ICT infrastructure. And it was sufficient Wi-Fi internet connection. Because we've had that same issue where we're all ready to record and it's like, oh no, the wind's blowing in Newfoundland, so we don't have an internet connection today. Or it's raining too hard, so we don't have an internet connection, whatever that happens to be.
Well, exactly. And I'm actually not in a library, a distended library here. I'm in an awesome basement suite. And it's awesome, but it is a basement suite. And to that effect, it is a basement suite in a 145-year-old historical building. So whatever structural factors even factor into that. So we're just at the mercy and at the whims of these various factors that when they're smiling upon us, we can do this stuff. And then other times you just gotta say, maybe today isn't the day, right?
For the people listening, can you describe the artwork you have behind you and how you created it?
Well, sure. This being a case where, like, every time I do one of these episodes of either podcast or even the lectures, I just feel like AI can add something that's better than just a doorway and an electrical room that would otherwise be visible in the frame behind me. So in this particular case, this is just a AI image generator. I lost my password. I didn't want to go through a password reset for Microsoft Bing's AI generator. So this actually came from something called, I've got it open, but it's a free pick. Whatever. Pick is spelled P-I-K. Free pick. This, the prompt for this, was simply a library after the bombs landed was the prompt, and it gave me four images to choose from. And I just really kind of like the, imagery and light saturation and colors and whatever else here. So, Bit of a long-winded answer for your very simple and straightforward question there, Doug.
I just really like the picture. I really like the image in behind, and I'd love to have a room like that. So,
my goal for my later whatever, I wouldn't call them post-educator years, because I think I'm going to be stuck with this way of thinking and being until I just no longer exist. But in my dotage, my later years where I don't have a job as such, I want to just spend as much time in rooms like this as possible. Just books upon papers, upon ephemera, upon anything, and just blog or write or do watercolor paintings or rooms like this were very always felt like a good thing if you ended up in a spot like that when you were younger, right? So
right on. The one last thing with this the Kohler article,
yep,
is one of the things they made a point of talking about was the electricity supply. And the current status at that university is a stable electricity supply at the university. The fact that they included that tells me a lot about what the actual situation is at a lot of places. It's why I want off-grid solar in my house, because the number of times I have lost power in my house in Prince Edward Island is obscene. I've lost more in the last year and a half than I did in the 50 some years before I moved here. That's how bad the electrical infrastructure is. And it's kind of tough to do a podcast when you don't have any power. And kind of everything I do plugs into the wall.
I feel like wind turbines should be a thing out there, like offshore wind farms or something, such as I've heard of in other jurisdictions, like in Europe and stuff. But
they basically have people convinced that this is just how power is. And the locals are like, okay, I guess that's just what it is. The power goes out. People have. Yeah, it's like. And I'm like, no, this isn't acceptable anywhere else. Why is it acceptable here? Anyway, that's my little rant about electricity, because normally that doesn't come up when you're doing planning for stuff. It's just, what do you mean there's no electricity here? In my experience, that's just not a thing. But in other places, it's very real. So I need to say.
Middle East, South Asia, right? Sri Lanka. This is where this is coming from, so this research. Cool, man. So are we on to the Kohler and Jaliov, report on edutech implementation.
We just did that one.
Oh, dang. Sorry, that's from the table, and I'm yep. misinterpreting the Google Doc, folks.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, the Cohen 2024. Wow, this year, Doug, for this one?
Yeah. I'm doing the range. This is 20 years worth of ed tech research in implementing projects and what's going on. And so this Cohen one is markets ed tech and the spaces of schooling. And they talked a lot about the geography. But what I really liked about this article is this brought home ideas that I've been struggling with for years and haven't cared for. And for the past several decades, K-12 schooling has been an area of interest for investors who view it as a virtually untapped market to be exploited. And this is part of my stance. The one time I got brigaded on Twitter is when I made a comment to one of these ed tech influencers that's got a million followers.
Yeah.
Where she was claiming, well, ed tech is, and it's like, no. Ed tech has nothing to do about your money and pushing a product. That's not what ed tech is. That's capitalism. That's not ed tech. And then her followers, oh my goodness. Like they were vicious. And it's like, okay, you're brainwashed, not interested in having an open mind or looking at other things. And so I just stepped back and said, okay, I'm unfollowing this one. This one is not worth 2 seconds of my time. I'm not living my life to take abuse from these people. But Cohen also talks about like the increased marketization of educational practices.
And marketization. What
it does, yeah. And it takes control over curricula, teaching, and for-profit infrastructure. So suddenly, instead of education being this big, broad thing that people can find all these different paths to, education becomes this one thing that can get measured, and it darn well better be coinciding with whatever that got sold to the school system or to the school institution.
Well, it becomes a matter, for instance, that we've talked about it on this show before, to the effect where you're having educators like only use evaluation and assessment measures as are available as feature sets within the learning management software. So multiple choice, Moodle quiz, that's it, because that's what can be automated. And a lot of the time, like the automatic functions are out of necessity functions which are aligned with lower order learning, like remember, maybe understand, if you're talking about Bloom's taxonomy, those kind of lower order. But then you start getting into like synthesize, evaluate, and some of these types of open-ended or other formats that require creativity and critical discernment and bringing in all the things you've actually learned. Sometimes it's just because you can't automate those questions as easily, if at all, there may be a tendency to just, for the sake of whatever's easiest in terms of a process of giving students marks is what you're going to go with, because otherwise you'd just be hosed with work, or you just would have to completely rethink how you even do evaluation. So that's something we've kicked around on the show a bunch. That and I'm sure we'll be revisiting that. But I think it just really speaks to the fact that vendors, marketing teams, whatever, have certainly carved themselves out a nice bit of space in the post-secondary environments. Possibly more so after COVID, where it was like, oh, well, you really need to ramp up your online stuff, because what if there's COVID 27 or whatever for the next time around? I think a lot of people got into meetings that I mean, that was like some of the advantages for them of the pandemic.
Yeah. For me, it's the narrow focusing of what gets counted as success. In education generally, we have now taken a more holistic, broad view of students and learners and educators as a whole.
Yeah.
Right? It's like lived experience and connection to communities. Well, if you get into a lot of like the indigenous education that is starting to emerge, that's been their tradition forever. But in EdTech, no, that's not it. That doesn't fit this grid that whoever the marketing person was that sold whatever to the system, yeah, that doesn't work, that doesn't fit, so that's not right. And it's how do we marginalize people even more? Let's get rid of their lived experience. Let's make sure that their connections to community don't matter, and we're only going to, this is what counts. And people have to get stuck in that little box. And that drives me bonkers, because that's somebody trying to make more money. It's like, I don't have a problem with commerce and people making money and paying for stuff to live, but there's never a limit. No matter how much money some people have, they just want more.
It's like, and they have increased space within the educational endeavor to occupy that, to make that a priority by lessening the distance between students' engagements and their products and services. So,
so much of it comes down to money. I had some friends that were working on a project with Sun Microsystems, and they were the big database company back in the day. And yep. They had terminals. Like, you came in and you sat at a terminal to do your thing, and the terminals were all connected to wherever the central processing was. And they said, we're giving you X amount of money to do this research, and the terminals have to be the center of it. Prove to everybody and publish that the terminals are good so that we can use it in marketing. So figure out a way to make the terminals useful. And it's like, mobile learning was just taking off. All these handheld devices were exploding. And you want us to go back to something from the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s? It's like, no, you have an antiquated technology. It's like LPs, right? I'm a big fan, not as big a fan as you. I think that's fair. I have a lot. Like, I have 3 record players and stuff, and they all do various things well. But if somebody came to me and said, okay, so not even LPs. The next step to LPs was cassettes, or like 8 tracks and then cassettes. If somebody came to me and said, here, I'll give you $1 million to do research, you need to prove that 8 tracks and cassettes are still useful and viable. It's like, oh, I definitely want to take the money, but in good conscience, I don't know if I'm smart enough to come up with any ways to prove that 8 tracks and cassettes still have a place in education or still have a place in people's lives. I just don't see it. But the EdTech providers, they've invested all this money in these terminals. Okay. Or it's the PDAs, the old Palm Pilots. If somebody came to you now and said, here's 50 Palm Pilots, prove that they work. Okay, I'm going to get a couple of lines on my resume, but look at the time I'm wasting with students or the participants. It's like, that's not fair. It just doesn't work. But right now, with how EdTech implementation projects go, it's like, okay, I'll give it a go. I'll give it a swing. Sorry, that's my final rant.
It's good. I think everything you've described is pretty relatable and will resonate not just with me, but potentially with other folks who are checking this out. Dude, I don't want to rush the end of the program, but I'm also due to meet my mom here for early lunch relatively soon, which is not to do with the scope of the show, But we do have some pretty rad visuals in here, and as well, the word, phrase, and question of the podcast, dude. So we can. I don't want to leave any of those out. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we get into that stuff?
Nope. So I have four things for the listeners. Go take a look at the website, and you will see a bunch of cartoons about projects and implementing and that sort of thing. And my favorite one, the big reason I wanted to do this, is I remember saving this Dilbert comic strip from 1999.
Okay.
Basically, it's Dilbert handing a thing to the boss saying, this is the bare minimum budget I need for the project. And the boss is like, what could you do with half this amount? And Dilbert's like, fail. And then the boss is like, when can you start? And it's like, I think I just did. Like, I know I'm going to fail. So, and there's others that are all about projects and the lack of thought that go into it. And so much of it is about money and stuff. Not all of it is, but so go take a look. I find them amusing. They were all sitting on my computer. So
I am I'm a fan of Dilbert as far as it goes. Any chance I can get to punch some comic strips or Dilbert, especially into the notes, is always a good use of my time and the WordPress resource, I got to say. So that's all highly legit, Doug.
Okay. And my three last things, word of the podcast is implement, because so many of these ed tech projects are about implementing something. So implement is the key concept. Question is, how can education focus on learners and educators rather than on corporate priorities? Aren't we here for the students? They're not our lab rats. And I don't even like the concept of lab rats. So that's another whole issue. But how can we make sure the focus stays on the learning and on the education?
Exactly.
And the phrase of the podcast is hosed with work or rethink how you do. And I just love that, because that's what EdTech projects do, right? EdTech projects are forcing people to rethink. And that's where some of the conflict comes in. It's like, I don't want to learn how to do it. I learned how to do that, and I'm stuck with that. Or let's just bury you in work until you figure out how to
So I like that notion. So to be clear, this is one phrase as opposed to – okay, so – host
you,
with
you don't listen? Work. You don't listen when you talk? That was from you.
Well, I'm thinking how it exists on the thing as a piece of writing. Host with work, comma. I'm going to put a comma in there.
Okay.
Or rethink how you do. Okay. I am prepared to endorse that, because apparently I said it earlier. So wouldn't want to be hypocritical within the same episode anyway. So
you just have two fantastic comments in there, and I just love the concepts of both. That's why I wanted to.
So we're just shoehorning them together. Nah, that's I endorse the approach and the mentality behind it, sir.
So I don't have anything else, but how about you? Is there anything you wanted to?
Nothing to speak to, especially just honestly, I'm glad we're at a spot where we don't have any backlog of episodes, where we can just sort of let things out as they come. And, hopefully people are enjoying this. I will say that there have been some awesome comments from Dr. Pamela Gurney's Education 5030 students on the EDI, the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion conversation that Dr. Hassan Arif and I had a couple weeks back, and coming up early in the week, Monday, Tuesday kind of thing, I'm actually going to be taking that response Google document, which you were kind enough to contribute to, Doug, as well as Hassan, and I'll punch some stuff into it myself as far as kind of having whatever to say, and that'll be coming out as some sort of response vis-a-vis the website, and then in addition to another lecture, which I've been invited to do for a different class by Pam also next week. So just a lot going on in terms of activities surrounding and through the show's infrastructure And I just think it's really, I just think it's neat to be at this point with the stuff, honestly. So thanks a lot, Doug, for building this with me. And thanks to everybody who's checking this out for any reason whatsoever. Take care, everybody.
Have a good day.